Hello and welcome to Sight for Sound Life Coaching with a Twist. I am your host and your life coach, Janet Collieri, and I am so excited for today's show. What is Sight for Sound? Sight for Sound to me means that the more you see yourself, the more sound choices you make in life. I like to speak in first person, and especially here where the listener can actually tell themselves this, as the more I see myself, the more sound choices I make in life. Then I have a sound life. So that's where Sight for Sound comes from. And Life Coach with the twist for me is there's an inside world in everybody, and sometimes we block parts of that world, and on the outside, on our physical appearance, it shows up, maybe a little dull, or as one of my friends says, like The Walking Dead. So what happens is when a person goes through a coaching process, they become more aware of themselves. They see themselves better. And what begins to happen on the outside world, on the physical world, is the way that they hold themselves, the way that they walk, there's a new light, there's new life in their eyes, their skin has a shine to it, or a radiance to it. So that's where the twist comes from, and so I actually document that with photography, and I'll take some photos at the beginning of our work together, some in the middle and some at the end, so that each person or company or organization can see the difference, how their inside world projects to the outside world. So enough about that. And reminding everyone, my purpose in life is inspiring human potential, and my purpose is to inspire your potential and to help you find your purpose or remind you of your purpose. To live on purpose, to live on track as much as possible, and create a life of joy. And today, I have a special guest, and his name is Maitreya. He's going to be on the show a little later and talking about his new book coming out, Sisterhood of the Dove. And I'm really excited about this book and that it's coming out at this time and how it relates to today's topic. So before I begin with the topic, I remind you to please call in anytime if you have comments or questions. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And the local number is 530-876-3222. 530-876-3222. Today's topic is on Anicca, and it's from India. It's spelled A-N-I-C-C-A, Anicca, which means the law of nature. The law of nature is impermanence. So everything is impermanence. It's temporary, or we could say that everything changes. Everything is always changing. And I'm really excited about the topic in terms of what Maitreya's book relates to: releasing fear, releasing jealousy, releasing power, and releasing control. I'm going to share a recent experience that I've had, which is why I'm so excited about the topic, Anicca. Okay, so a few weeks ago, I went and spent 10 days at a meditation called Vipassana. Vipassana is a meditation technique, and Vipassana means to see things as they truly are, and so that really resonates with what I do and my purpose and the name of my business, Sight for Sound, seeing things as they truly are. When a person practices Vipassana in their life, what they're doing is they are eradicating cravings and aversions. And they are eradicating ignorance, which really means that they are increasing their self-awareness. So they are becoming more aware of themselves. And therefore, learning how to eradicate cravings and aversions. So the cravings we have, the aversions we have, are what end up being misery. So the misery in this world, apparently, as I've been taught, and I'm believing it, and I'm experimenting as well, and simply offering information to you here. So the cravings and aversions we have are what end up in as misery. So if somebody's miserable, they have lots of cravings or lots of aversions, and no management over those. So through this meditation technique, which is science of mind and matter, a person reaches their unconscious. And the unconscious is always conscious or always aware of sensations. Sensations that go on in the body, deep inside the body, or on the periphery of the body. And we, in general, as a whole, are not very in tune or aware of these sensations. So the technique, the meditation technique, brings you to a place where you become very aware of these sensations in and on your body. The sensations are actually what we're addicted to. So if somebody is smoking, or somebody is a shopaholic, or is into emotional eating, that's not the addiction. That is actually what shows up as a craving or an aversion. But we are actually addicted to the sensation. And we are attempting to get that sensation, to feel the sensation. And since we are really not in tune with these sensations, we think that, you know, smoking or drinking or sex or food shopping or eating is going to fix. And it is a temporary fix. It fills the void for maybe a couple of minutes. But then the void becomes void again, and we become frustrated and miserable. So the idea is that we have an equanimous mind, equanimity, equal balanced mind. And having cravings and aversions is not an equal mind. So an equanimous mind is a happy mind, and a happy mind is a joyful life. When we're doing this technique, this is really cool, and I highly recommend this 10-day meditation retreat to everybody. It is so trippy and fabulous. And it has having to do with the science of mind and matter. It's sensational, no pun intended there. So when we're practicing the technique and we're in touch with our sensations, our job is to observe the sensation. Only observe it. So that means no judging it. No calling it pain, no calling it big, no calling it small, no calling it ecstasy, no calling it an itch or a tickle or anything. The job is to just observe the sensation. When we observe anything in life, so this really applies to life, but when we observe anything in life, we're not judging it. When we observe, we're not giving power to that thing. We're not adding fuel to the fire. So think about your life. Just think about who you are, and you go through life, and you get this chronic pain in your neck, and you're consistently attempting to push it away to make it go away. That's an aversion. And you're not observing it. You're judging it as pain, and you're attempting to push it away. So you're actually adding power to it. In this technique, when we observe it, we add no power to it, and therefore these sensations begin to dissolve. They begin to go away, and that's how we end up having equanimity or balance in our body and in our mind. So what does this have to do with anicca, the law of nature, which is impermanence? Well, when we are going through life and we come up with our, you know, our aversions come up or our cravings come up, we can remind ourselves about impermanence and just say, you know what, it's not going to last really long. It's going to be changing. It's changing as I'm speaking. And when we get to that place where we know it's going to change, it's not going to stick around, then we become unattached. We become unattached to it going away or having more of it or it being different or somebody being different or something being different. I crave something to be different. So what we do is we end up becoming unattached to that. And then we begin to have this sense of freedom inside our bodies. It creates a sense of harmony, which is opposite of ego, an ego of, you know, there's fear, there's greed, there's control, and there's power, which are four pieces, pieces in Maitreya's book. How would life look like if you were ready to release fear, jealousy, power, and control? Well, I think it would look like a lot of harmony, and that's in really in the unattachment of what we crave or what we avert. It's fascinating. It works. I've been practicing it for three weeks now, almost a month, and the technique works. And I highly recommend it. And it's fun. It's a fun experiment, and I call it an experiment because it's impermanent, and I'm choosing to practice it. So I can choose to practice it, and then I can choose not to. So that's the great thing of the law of nature, is we're really never stuck. We're never stuck in anything. We're not stuck in a situation. We're not stuck in how we feel. We're not stuck. We're just not stuck. So things are impermanent. Things change. And I talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago on my show. Is the good news is we have choice. And I think that choice is directly related to impermanence. So there's a whole lot of freedom that goes on there and goes on inside our body. And, you know, think about the next time you have a craving or an aversion. Remind yourself to observe it rather than judge it. I'm not saying that this is easy to do. It takes practice, but it's worth exploring. It's worth experimenting with. So next time you have a craving or an aversion, observe it. Don't judge it. Remind yourself that it's impermanent, that it's going away. So sensations arise and then they fall away. They arise, they pass away, they arise, they pass away, they arise, they pass away. It's never stuck there. And I think when I was at the meditation retreat, I was thinking about how wonderful this technique would be if it were taught in prisons. And it turns out that it is. It is being taught in prisons. And if we tie all of this together, someone in prison has done something unlawful. And guaranteed, whatever this person has done or didn't do came from an aversion or a craving, came from that state, came from a craving state or an aversion state, absolutely, and most likely from fear, greed, control, or power, one of those four elements inside of the craving or aversion, absolutely. So if we take this teaching into prisons and teach it and support the prisoners to eradicate their cravings and aversions, when they go back out into the world, they're transformed. They have been educated. They've been educated on what was going on for them before they got into prison, what was going on for them in the moment when they got caught and handcuffed and put into prison. And they can also actually begin to enjoy have a little bit of enjoyment in their stay in prison. And maybe some of you are laughing at that, but if I were a prisoner and I learned this technique, I would certainly be grateful for it. I would be less irritated. I would feel less confined. If I was feeling confined, then I would be having an aversion to being confined, and I would be having a craving for open space or freedom. So I'm personally very happy that this is being taught in prisons, and I'm definitely committed to seeing that the education of this technique gets to all the prisons. And for all you mothers out there who have given birth, another thought for me is that this would be a great technique to use during childbirth. And I would really love to hear your thoughts on this. I have not given birth. I've heard plenty of stories about giving birth and the pain and discomfort that is involved. And since we're talking about eradicating cravings and aversions, aversion here meaning pain, and we're craving that the pain would go away and that it would be easy, I imagine that if a woman learned this Vipassana meditation technique and practiced it and then gave birth, that if they applied this technique during birth, that it would be extremely beneficial. And I'm fascinated with that and would love to have a conversation just on that subject. So without further ado, I think it's perfect time to bring in Maitreya, who for 20 years has been a metaphysical teacher, a healer, a counselor, a psychic, and a soon-to-be published author, which I'm thrilled about. The book is called Sisterhood of the Dove, A Clarion Call of Mary Magdalene. And this book explores the life of Mary Magdalene, or as she's called in this book, Miriam. And the headline, one of the pieces of intention of this book is how would life look like if you were ready to release fear, jealousy, power, and control? And I think that question is really applicable to today's topic on anicca, on impermanence and the Vipassana technique. Maitreya is a dear friend of mine, a dear colleague, a student. And Maitreya, I welcome you to my show, to Cipher Sound, and you listeners are in for a wonderful man and a wonderful book that is. When is it going to be published, Maitreya?
Well, first I'll say hello.
Hello.
Thank you for inviting me to your show.
Welcome.
I've known you for a while, and I have never heard you describe Sight for Sound the way you had, and I'm really taken by that, making sound choices.
Thank you.
And the book, it's in pre-production right now. I'm expecting it out near the end of October, provided we get all the little glitches out of it in that production phase of life.
Yeah.
And I get to practice Vipassana around that, I suppose, being detached to its actual release time. and trusting in the flow. I've been wanting it out for a while, and it's got its own rhythm.
Certainly. And so, Maitreya, share with us the book, a little bit about the book, the intention of writing the book, the message of the book, and how you were inspired to write it.
It started on July 22nd in 2003 when the energy of Mary Magdalene came to me. And I started hearing the words Sisterhood of the Dove. And I thought, what a great name for a book.
Mm.
And for me, being a writer, I always got the names of books after they had been written. And here I was getting this name for a book, so that to me meant that the book was already written somewhere in the ethers. All I had to do was bring it into written form. And through a series of interviews with Mary, as I would call it, she wanted me to tell her story. And it follows the life, the book that is, follows the life of Mary and 21 other souls that incarnated at that time. And the reason that they came, and that reason is to offer humanity the Holy Spirit, or the energy of the dove. And it, on Earth right now, as you're talking about, would you call it the attachments? Aversions?
Aversions and cravings.
Right. So the aversions and cravings, in some ways, fear, jealousy, power, control, those things are things we can get enslaved to, much like cravings, much like aversion. So the energy of the dove, which is equivalent to the energy of the goddess of old times and the energy of Shekinah in the Bible, offers us the opportunity to rise above attachment and detachment. It actually offers an opportunity to become one again.
Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying.
That's a great opportunity.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying about that everything is impermanent, and I almost ascribe to that. I have one thing that I think is permanent, and that is called spirit, or what I would call spirit.
I agree with that. So speak more about that, because I agree.
So on the 3D level, in the physical world of matter, I totally believe that everything is impermanent. And what Mary and the soul group came to offer was the true thing that is impermanent, which is the energy of the dove or the energy of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And in us remembering that connection, we truly can let go of our aversions, our cravings, our fears. You were talking about being in prison. I know that in my own life, many times I feel imprisoned by my own fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of... I've been blessed in my life. It doesn't seem to stop fear at times where I feel like I'm just as much as a slave as if I was in jail.
Sure.
From a mental point of view.
Sure.
So the book sort of took on a life of its own. It kind of wrote itself. Mary dictated it to me, I wrote it down, and she just wanted me to get this information out. And so I made it into a novel. And people can choose what they believe is true, what they don't agree with. I wrote it to create discussion, create people to think, you know, what's really going on. How can it apply to relevant times today? And so from the novel point of view, it's written from one of Mary's children, because in the book Mary has children.
Mm-hmm.
And her child is sitting telling a story of her mother's life.
Okay, and the daughter's name is Rachel?
Yes.
Okay.
In Sister of the Dove, Mary has 5 children, and she has 3 with Jesus, who is called Yeshua in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you an idea of the story, it's in the middle of the story where Yeshua gets crucified. So there's still a whole other half book of what goes on in Mary's life and how she honors the teachings and continues on with anchoring the energy of the Holy Spirit and the goddess and continuing to offer people in sort of an underground way at that time, because it wasn't so popular to be doing it up in public, you know?
Sure.
The times were very full of controlling, fearful priests and Roman leaders and things, and not at times unlike today.
So what is your favorite part of the book? And would you want to share a piece of that with our audience?
Well, I don't actually have the papers in front of me, but the one of my favorite parts is where Mary is first meets Jesus. And in the biblical sense, we know that story to be when she's getting stones thrown at her. And as that continues along, though, and he walks home with her, she begins to remember who he is, and he begins to remember who she is.
Mm.
And in that, the maybe you've heard it said, wherever two or more are gathered in my name, there shall I be.
Sure.
So that energy of the two of them coming together calls forth their mission to the next level, calls forth their purpose to the next level. And a very powerful awakening happens for Mary at that point. And she taps into her life's calling. You talked about purpose in the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And she remembers her purpose. And now she has to make this choice. Is she going to allow society and how much she's been criticized and judged and put down to stop her and be her fears, give in to the controls of society, or is she going to rise up and, at the time, I guess, really be a revolutionary, a rebellion, you know?
Sure.
And we're confronted with those choices today. When we get a divine inspiration, which master are we going to serve? Are we going to serve the ego, or are we going to serve spirit?
That's a great question, Maitreya.
Which goes right into your cravings. And are we going to serve that craving and lust after what we need to get, some outer circumstance, or are we going to go inward and connect with the divine?
And that is not an easy, it's not an easy choice, it's not an easy way of being in society.
True.
It
requires all our courage.
Yes. And so Mary, her purpose was to raise the consciousness of humankind.
May I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
One of her purposes was to be the feminine counterpart to Yeshua's masculine. See, in the divine, we're both masculine and feminine. We're one. Before we're born. But when we come here, we take on male bodies and female bodies. We take on an energy. And so playing it out in this earth dimension, on earth, she represented the feminine principle and he represented the masculine principle. And then around them, they surrounded themselves with a group of people that would help them carry on the teachings. So when we hook back into spirit, we're hooking back into something that's not of duality, not of attachment, not of detachment, not of craving, not of denial of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really gives an access for freedom.
Because there's no duality.
Because there's no duality.
Ah.
Quite a thought,
well,
huh?
Yeah, it's even a better place to be than what Vipassana brings. I mean, this is like...
Well, I don't know about better.
Well, I mean, I think it's the ultimate place. If we're eradicating cravings and aversions to have an equanimous, a balanced mind and spirit. Well, I guess a balanced mind, right? Then. We're pretty close to spirit because there's no duality in equanimity.
Right. When you're sitting there as the observer, is that what you call it, the observer?
Yeah.
When you're the observer, you're really just doing that. You're not going with one side or the other. So you're in that internal space of oneness. The interesting thing is, though, to play on Earth, you got to give that up a little bit and take an action.
Sure. And so speak more about that one must take an action.
So So in taking an action, it in this dimension, on Earth, we need pluses and minuses, like electricity. You know, you got the plus and the minus, it creates electricity. We need males and females to make babies. So we do need to participate in the polarity. It's about, are we master of the polarity, or is it mastering us?
Gotcha. Are we master of polarity, or is it mastering us?
Right. Are we eating to live, or are we living to eat?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Are we having sex for procreation and fun, or are we having it to fulfill some kind of need where we feel empty inside?
Mm-hmm. These are all great questions. All great questions, because everything we do has a purpose. And the passion and the law of nature reminders that we always have a purpose and intention in everything that we're doing, and Mary Magdalene is offering humanity a key to freedom and liberation by raising their consciousness in terms of having people be aware of what their purpose or intention is in. Am I eating to live, or am I living to eat? Am I having sex to procreate, or am I having sex to fill a void?
Right. And that's not to say that while we're here, every day we could be confronted with fear.
Sure.
Every day we could want something that our neighbor has and has an experience of envy or jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
Every day we might want to control our circumstances. And yet...
Yep.
So I'm not saying that the book is like this master thing that all of a sudden it goes away. But
no.
It goes along in the lines of what you were talking about. We have choice. And when we become conscious that we have choice, it's like, oh, here's the fear. How long am I going to give into that fear? So we may say, okay, today I'm going to give into my fear for 5 minutes. And in 5 minutes, I'm choosing my spirit. What could that look like? Choosing my spirit could look like, I go out and do something that makes me joyful. Excuse me. I go out and do something that lifts my energy. Maybe I take a shower. Maybe mm-hmm. I go hug a tree or go into nature and go on a hike.
I garden.
So yes, garden, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So something that puts us in the flow of living again. Spirit is all about joy. So I may be using a word, and it might be, I don't know if it alienates certain people or not, but it's just the energy of love. It's the energy of joy. It's the energy of compassion, of things that's not fear and suffocation and
sure. Control. And fear is interesting, the concept of it. I mean, we're having a conversation about something that is unpleasant, and that we do have choice to be with it and become a victim of it, or we do have choice to honor it and check it out and then move on, and we have choices on how we get to move on, and then there's this other piece for me. Which a lot of people have fear because there's this unknown. There's an uncertainty. They don't have enough information or knowledge.
Right.
It could be something so simple. So simple is that.
Right.
And
as we connect with our innocence, trust, and faith, that provides an access to the divine. And it's not an outer divine, it's an inner divine. It may show up like outer experiences being heavenly, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it can show up out there, outside of us, if it's not already showing up inside of us first.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to repeat that again for the audience. Is nature is talking about our inner divine. So
Yeah, the Holy Spirit in the case of Sisterhood of the Dove wasn't something so much that Mary and Jesus and the disciples gave to the people. It's more something they reminded the people was lying dormant within them.
Sure. Lying dormant within them.
We're often conditioned that in order to get God, we need to go to a church. In order to get God, we need to go to a synagogue or some type of outer worship place. And that's cool, that's fine, but it's not necessary. Those things are outer places, going to an altar to offer reverence, and it's all good, but if we forget that it's also inside of us, then we're back into the world of duality.
Yeah. And we're speaking again to the foundation of my teaching, and I think is your teaching, is ownership.
Yes.
Like there's an inner divine, it's inside of me, I have choice, it's in me, and that's the ownership. And every time we think it's outside, like we have to go to a synagogue to be one with spirit, then we're in a, you know, somewhat of a position of a victim, meaning that we're counting on something outside of ourselves to have a certain experience.
Or at the very least, we're only connected to God for 1 hour on a Saturday or a Sunday or a Friday. as opposed to waking up every morning, calling forth your higher self, calling forth your spirit, and saying, today I create my life, or today I'm going to walk in peace. Today I'm going to walk in wherever the spirit wants me to walk in. And one thing I've definitely noticed following the path of spirit doesn't make life easy.
No.
It still wants me to do what I would call the difficult earth lessons. The difference is I feel a strength and a support that when I didn't know about this, I felt much more alone and abandoned.
Yeah. I mean, when I feel alone and abandoned, there's a certain, that's coming from fear, and going back to what I was saying is sometimes fear just comes from not having enough information or knowledge, and you would just be describing that once you learned about this and you discovered it, feeling alone was not as potent.
Correct. It changes more the word alone to all one.
Ah.
It's the same word, just play with the letters a bit, you know?
Sure. All one. It's kind of like always. Always.
Yeah.
I'm gonna shout out the phone numbers to call in, and so we'll pause for a second here, and we welcome callers with comments and questions, 877-876-5227, local 530, 876-3222, 877-876-5227. We welcome comments and questions, and we'll hear a buzz in the background. So let's continue here, and
could we go to talk a little bit about addiction again?
Yeah, that's actually where I was going to.
So you were talking about Vipassana, if I heard correctly, and then we have these addictions, and we then is to watch that space rather than fulfilling it with some outer thing. And what I've been taught is to fill it with God, or fill it with spirit, or fill it with something what I would call permanent,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the impermanent thing of the food. And so for me, addiction is what I would call like a hole in your soul.
Sure.
And as you fill up with that tangible substance of the universe, then when we play with sex and food and drugs and alcohol, it's really just playing with it. And one really gets to the states where you hear about the yogis in India who can drink poison and it just doesn't matter. They arise above that, which I'm not recommending anybody go out and drink poison.
Yes.
but there's beings on earth that truly point out that when you're so connected with the divine, nothing of this physical world can touch you.
Exactly. So filling it with something permanent, which we're talking about here, is Holy Spirit, is opposite of ego. And the ego is directly connected with these sensations, or the craving to have a sensation, or the aversion to a sensation. And in the Vipassana, we get ourselves to where we can actually feel the sensations, and in observing them, I think that is it's not coming from the ego. It's just an observation with no attachment.
Right.
And so I think that's.
I'm not saying
it is the Holy Spirit that's permanent, but when we practice this for however long, it could be a lifetime, we are dissolving what we're attached to.
I'd like to add too that we do need some sense of ego to be on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's listeners out there thinking you just got to get rid of your ego, I think that's a bit of a fantasy.
Sure.
Because we do need a personality to function here. Maybe if we're going to go live in a cave or something and not deal with life in a major city or something, or our children, we can go and have no ego. But our kids still need to know how to relate to us, and our employers need to know how to relate to us. And I believe without an ego, it's difficult to relate. So I like to talk about a healthy ego versus a toxic one, you know?
Sure. And a healthy ego for you, describe that. Or how does Mary Magdalene describe that?
Well, I think it goes right to choice. It's reminding yourself that you have the choice. She talks about in the book waking up each morning and cleaning a table. The dust settles on the table overnight, and every day she has to clean the table. Well, that's a metaphor for the mind. The dust of the mind settles, like our fears or oh my God, I've got to do this and this and this and this, and then we kind of get ourselves into a rut. And we have a choice in that day who we're going to be as we do these tasks, as we get out of bed. And that's where the power lies in we can let our ego serve us there. Ego can take us to do all those things and get them done and get paid well and get our kids off to school and make them happy to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. And we can do all that with some sense of giving the fruits away, being detached, giving the fruits to God, giving the fruits to Spirit. And I've been practicing this for 20 years, and I still have a ways to go. So that's what's great about in the book. She says it's a daily practice. At one point, she's in her late 60s, I think, in the story, and she has a thought of judgment come across her where she wishes harm on the people that killed Jesus. And in that moment, she sees that she'd been working with the goddess and working for and studying and being in meditation and doing all the right things, we'd say, for close to 50 years, you know? And it still happens to her that she has to cleanse that part of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so she really makes the point that no matter how highly evolved you get, it still takes consciousness every day to walk in your inner power.
Sure, and that's because it's impermanent.
Exactly. The Native
And then let's not be attached to being perfect and getting it all right at the age of 50, because
exactly.
It's not going to happen.
The Native Americans talk about dying each night and being reborn the next day, and not to bring the past with you. So everything needs to get resolved before bed, and you wake up brand new.
Mm-hmm. Resolve before bed and wake up brand new. And you know, I'm laughing here because I remind people of evolution, which is impermanence and evolution and purpose and make it a game, make it an opportunity. It is an opportunity, and that there is helpful in eradicating cravings and aversion and the unhealthy ego. It is, it's a game of discovery, and I think we're extremely blessed to have an opportunity to discover. I mean, almost in every moment of every day, and that if impermanence, if the law of nature was not created, then this world wouldn't even be as it is today. I mean, the dinosaurs would still be around. And so let's talk about, we have fear and jealousy, power and control. Let's talk about control. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, in terms of control and how you see it as a craving and how you see it as an aversion, or how Mary Magdalene, how she presented it to the people.
There's a passage in the book where she's dealing with her third-born child, Sarah, who is the firstborn with Jesus. And Sarah goes missing. And Mary starts being like a mother, frantic, wondering where her child is. And Jesus comes to her and tells her to trust that the child is fine and she's where she needs to be. And Mary gets in that moment that she just wants to control her young child in not being able to walk away, if you can imagine, like we want to control another person to do what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, she realizes how much lack of surrender she has, how much lack of faith she has, how much lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying to the listeners, let their kids go do whatever they want, but if you come across that inner thing about controlling, then it really is stressful and taking one out of their center.
Yes. And it's there's a duality there.
Yeah, we often...
For me, I see the duality of, like, craving and aversion is happening simultaneously often.
We often want to control because we feel powerless.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some lack of acceptance, there's some distrust or lack of faith in a bigger plan. I've often been told by my friends that I have what they call mouse vision, and it's kind of funny because being a psychic, I can see so into the far into the future for other people, but for myself, I tend to be very upfront and only dealing with what's in front of me, and they encourage me to have a broader view of my own life. So it's an example where when I get into that place and I'm not thinking of the bigger picture, like impermanence, like this too shall pass, I can get very controlling. I have to I have to get to this place on time, and time begins to run my life.
Oh yes, the time thing.
Or I'll get afraid, if I'm late, this person won't like me, you know?
Sure, so the craving is to be on time, and the aversion is to is to the judgment of others of you being late.
Yeah, those are good examples.
Such a simple example. There's so many examples, and that's really just simple. And for the listeners, I hope that piece right there just brought a little bit more of awareness to you and in your daily life.
Have you ever had the experience when you're in what I would call the flow or the current, or you're in that energy of God or the Holy Spirit, or
mm-hmm.
just get one with the universe, that time seems to stretch?
Yes.
That all of a sudden, what should be rush hour, all of a sudden somehow you're finding your way through traffic and it's working out?
Yeah.
And so I don't really, that's part of the miracle and the mystery of life to me. But I know when I'm in that place, everything seems to work out. And when I'm in that fearful place that I'm not going to make it to my destination on time, I usually don't.
Yeah, well, when we're in the flow, there's no resistance. So there's just this open pathway.
And that's one of the things that the soul group with Mary, when they came here, the plan, their original plan changed. Their original plan was to offer the teachings. And then when humanity crucified Jesus, it was like a symbol of, it doesn't matter if it's what religion you are, it was a symbol to humanity that they didn't want to accept the teaching of the Holy Spirit. So when we rejected that as humanity, plans changed. And so the timing changed. And here we are some 2,000 years later, still learning how to accept it.
Oh, that's very, very interesting.
So I get upset sometimes and want to control just getting to my appointments on time. Here's a soul group that comes to me in spirit that said, hey, you think you want to be on time? We've been trying to work this out for 2,000 years. And actually, when you read the story, you'll see that it's much longer than that, too.
Yeah, I bet.
So that's one thing that really strikes me about the energy of the Holy Spirit and the dove and Mary, the trust that it's all going to work out in God's timing.
Yes, and sometimes we don't like that timing, which is when control comes in.
Right.
So for you or for Mary Magdalene, what is the difference between power and control?
In this case, I have nothing against people feeling empowered and personal power. This is more about the used in the context of the dominance over others.
Okay.
Like intimidation. Like unhealthy authority.
Okay.
Where all of a sudden the government's imposing martial law.
Okay.
Or in that time, the Sanhedrin, who were the Jewish high priests, they passed a lot of laws that said that the people had to worship this way and couldn't worship that way and couldn't work on this day and things like that.
Talk about cravings.
So there's sort of that famous thing in the Bible, quote in the Bible, where Jesus works on the Sabbath. And in the sense that he heals someone on the Sabbath and he gets himself in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like in direct contrast, like here he is breaking Jewish law and yet he's saving someone's life. And,
yeah.
And that's what spirit can ask you to do. It's not always easy. Yeah.
No, it's not. And I know that he was clear on his intention. You know, he was coming from a good intention.
Right.
Yeah.
When we're in that place, that's the true place of empowerment, because we're also willing to handle the consequences, too.
Yes.
We know that maybe we're breaking the law, but we're willing to live with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, a good question to ask oneself is, you know, what is my intention? Is my intention good, and am I willing to deal with the consequence? And again, that's all about choice, and creates such a sense of freedom inside oneself. And we So we have about 1 minute left here, Maitreya. I have another question quickly about your book. And are there exercises or tools in your book so that people can apply, like, what they learned today? Is there any type of application specifically in your book, or is it specifically a story?
So it's a yes and a no answer.
Okay.
There are no set, do this and you'll achieve this. It is definitely a novel. The way it's written, though, with the energy of the Holy Spirit through it, begins to transform one just by being in the presence of that energy. And so the doing is in the reading.
Great.
And then there's a DNA cellular shift that's taking place. That requires some faith for you to trust in that, but I just totally know it to be true. In the old days, teachings were all done orally. And the teacher transmitted the energy, or like in Hinduism, the Shakti, or maybe the Chi. They transmitted that energy to the disciple or the student. So today, I've done my best to transmit that energy through the written word to be able to touch more people.
Well, I think there are going to be many, many people who are touched and inspired, and having cellular shifts taking place, whether they know it or not. I know I have in having you in my life, Maitreya, and I thank you for being in my life, and I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and celebrating yourself here on my radio show today.
I'd just like to add that there's a workshop that goes along with the book.
Oh, great.
So after they read it, our first workshop is going to be held in Scotland next July 22nd. The details are still being worked out. And in the book, there'll be a website information that they can go to if they feel so called to join us in Scotland.
Great. And I'll be putting up your information on my site on BBS Radio so people can contact you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And create an amazing day for yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is inspirational speaker Wambui Bahati, and you're listening.